And now a message from the palace. For his first state dinner of 2025, King Charles opening the gates of Windsor to France's Emmanuel Macron, not the United States' Donald Trump. That'll come later this year, at a time when the United Kingdom's forced to rethink its role in an uncertain world. Is it turning on Winston Churchill's adage about Britain that, quote, every time we have to decide between Europe and the open sea, she must always choose the open sea? On that point, Emmanuel Macron was handed the microphone earlier at Westminster as the first European leader honored with a state visit and an address to the joint sessions of Parliament since Brexit. We'll ask about his message and the symbiotic ties that bind the continent's only nuclear powers. On that score, one of the highlights of the three-day visit, the French president, UK prime minister, will Thursday host a joint virtual summit of a coalition of the willing on Ukraine. From the NATO base at Northwood in England. Symbolic show or a new chapter for cross-channel relations? Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at France's Emmanuel Macron's state visit to Britain. With us from London, France 24 correspondent Bénédicte Paviot. Thanks for being with us. From Strasbourg, he's chair of the EU-UK Parliamentary Partnership Assembly. Sandro Gozzi, member of the European Parliament for Emmanuel Macron's Renew Europe bloc. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
She knows all about Britain's swings in sentiment over France and Europe this past century. Laura Carter, lecturer in British history at the University of Paris Cité. Good to see you.
Good evening.
And Christian Lequen, professor of European Studies at the French Political Science Institute, Sciences Po. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine. I hope.
You hope.
I will speak English fluently tonight.
All right. Emmanuel Macron set the bar earlier. We'll ask Bénédicte about that. If you're on the go, you can always listen to the show wherever podcasts are streamed. Yeah, Kate and Wills went to fetch them at the plane. France's president and first lady brought to Windsor Palace for the kickoff of a three-day state visit. Elisa Gadeva has more.
A royal welcome for French President Emmanuel Macron and his wife Brigitte Macron. They're beginning their three-day state visit to the UK, greeted by the Prince and Princess of Wales, William and Kate, before heading to Windsor Castle for a state banquet where the French couple is welcomed by King Charles and Queen Camilla. The monarch is expected to steer clear of politics, a task that's left for Prime Minister Keir Starmer's meeting with the French president. The visit is seen as a symbolic reset for the two countries that drifted apart after Brexit. Macron is the first EU leader to visit the UK since it left the bloc in 2020.
Well, there's a need, I think, to catch up after the damage done to the bilateral relationship after the Brexit negotiations, when France was more or less playing the bad cop in that sense.
Beyond its symbolism, both Macron and Starmer hope for practical results. Migration is one of the more sensitive topics on the table. Starmer hopes to announce more robust cooperation between the two countries to curb illegal migrant crossings of the English Channel. In 2024, more than 36,000 arrivals on British shores have been recorded by the British government, a yearly increase of 25%. Macron and Starmer are also expected to focus on defense, in search of a response to the return of war to Europe with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And although discussions on energy and trade are also expected, most topics are covered at a European level, a space where the United Kingdom doesn't have a say.
Lofty issues on the menu. Bénédicte Paviot, let's start with the most important. What's for dinner?
I'm afraid I've been steeped in geopolitics and the speech of Mr. Macron and trying to find out, because we didn't quite get the access we needed to because of the police, to the Churchill statue. I know. I must do better and check on that menu. I think it's going to be even if they will be British products.
All right. And, you know, we're saying that, yeah, no politics when it's the king, but don't we already have the politics with the optics of receiving France's president before Donald Trump?
Yes, I gather that's being really widely covered in the French media. It's being somewhat covered over here. Of course, what Donald Trump will get is unprecedented, and therefore, yes, I am going to use that word, historic, because he will get a second state visit. We covered the first one. Of course, a lot of water has gone under the bridge, tariffs, etc. But some people in the British media are saying that actually President Macron stole a march on the US president because he got his state visit in first.
Yeah, so much has changed since the last time a French president visited. It's a while now, 2008. Back then, the tabloids were enamored with Nicolas Sarkozy's new bride, ex-supermodel Carla Bruni. And of course, back then, it was a different monarch, Laura Carter. When you look at those images, you realize just, wow, how much has happened since.
Absolutely, yes. So much time has passed. So many things have happened in the Anglo-French relationship since 2008, of course. Most obviously Brexit. And then we had that whole period of a kind of culture war politics under the Conservatives, which really kind of showed various kinds of hostility towards France, some of it more lighthearted than others, with Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. So, we've got King Charles, and we've got Starmer, and a new Labour government looking for this kind of reset after Brexit. So, yeah, I mean, I think just looking at those images, we can really, really see how much time has passed, but that a lot happened in actually a relatively short amount of period in the Anglo-French relationship too. So, there's lots to see as to what will come of this visit this time after 17 years.
Sandro Gozzi, are things going full circle with the British?
Things are improving dramatically in our relationship with the British, both from the French perspective and from the European perspective. We were a little bit worried that there were only nice words coming from the British government, from 10 Downing Street, but actually there are also strong commitment. What we have decided, recommended as parliamentarian in March, what Keir Starmer, Ursula von der Leyen, and Antonio Costa decided on behalf of UK and EU to do with the summit, the statement of the 19th of May summit, a strong partnership in security and defence, proper implementation of the existing agreement, and searching also for new joint initiative goes absolutely toward the right direction. So I think that not only the tone has changed across the channel, but also the substance. And I think that this is absolutely positive in both in both side interests. I hope it is only the beginning, but it's a very promising beginning.
A very promising beginning. Christian Lequin, you saw this moment coming, where we would see what Sandro Gozzi just described?
Yes, we saw it, at the beginning of the Conservative leadership, because it started with Rishi Sunak. There was a kind of normalization compared to the predecessors. But then the big change was the election in July 2024 of the Labour and Starmer. And the impression that we have is that it's a new step for the UK. Europe is not just the enemy.
In his speech, Emmanuel Macron even got applause when he talked about cultural exchanges and university students being able to visit each other's countries. Whereas had been suspended a few years ago.
Absolutely.
Back.
This is something we'll have to improve.
So what happened? What changed?
Well, what changed is that in the past, when the UK was member of the European Union, the student could move through the programme Erasmus. And this was cancelled with Brexit, right? So the idea now is to favour a new mobility between British students and European students, not just French students.
He didn't get applause all the time. So, Sandro Gozzi, why did he get applause on that particular point?
Well, this programme is very important, as Christian Lequin was rightly saying. because, you know, if we want to build up a new partnership, if we want to invest on our common future, the best things to do is to invest on our youth, is to invest on the new generation, is to invest on exchange, is to invest on exchange which goes beyond only also the university. Erasmus Plus doesn't cover only university exchange, but can promote a movement of apprenticeship, voluntary service association, sport association. We really have to go beyond, and beyond the university cooperation, which is very important. And we have to promote this youth opportunities approach. Also because, I mean, imagine if we started to diverge and to, prevent youths from meeting each other between across the channel. I mean, in 10 years, our youth in Europe and UK won't even remember that UK used to be a member of the European Union. And this is exactly what we want to do. We want to share a memory, and we want to underline that our relation is, in any case, whether we like it or not, a special relationship, because it's the first time that we organize a partnership with a former member of the EU, EU member state. And I think that I insist, promoting youth exchange, betting on youth, it is the best way of lay down true foundation of a new partnership between EU and UK. And then there are also common interests. I mean, a research program, cooperation between EU university and UK university. They all go toward the direction of a shared interest, I believe.
A shared interest. And there was even Bénédicte Pavieux in his speech, Emmanuel Macron, who drew a bit of a laugh when he talked about, speaking of cultural exchanges, loaning the Bayeux tapestry, which to art historians, I guess you could call it the world's first cartoon. It recounts the exploits of William the Conqueror in defeating the English all those years ago. It was both a jab at past rivalries, but also perhaps part of this closening of ties that's being brought about because of a broader context.
Indeed, and there are very many shared ties culturally, in all kinds of manners. We heard him state that figure, that there are 300,000 French people, and that's a minimum. I think there are far more that are not registered with the French consulate who live in the United Kingdom, that France is the second biggest employer in the United Kingdom, also that there are over 130 or 150,000 Brits who actually live in France, and many more who come as tourists. Can I just pick up on the youth mobility thing, is what President Macron said, which is pure logic and common sense. He talked about the fact that, you know, it is important that the young now and generations enjoy what we had. And I think that is a very fundamental comparison. And it's, I think, an image that most people can understand. So we need to prepare for that future. Now, I need to do a spoiler alert or not, because I'm going to tease you. I have in front of me, but it's embargoed, the menu that will be enjoyed tonight at Windsor Castle. I'm very sorry, but I can't reveal it for
Come
another 35
on, you can break
minutes.
Break an embargo, Bénédicte.
No. My reputation, my worldwide reputation on France 24 in French and English means that I can't, but I can tell you that it looks absolutely delicious, including, I can say that there's going to be coffee and petit four. That's not dangerous, including the wine list and what the beverages that will be enjoyed during and after the dinner. That's all I can say at
can
this
you
point.
Tell
I'm
us,
very sorry.
Does the food read as though it's French or English?
It doesn't specify, as far as I can see. I can tell you that there is a French... Oh, I hope I'm not breaking an embargo if I say there is a French chef somewhere in there involved. I hope I won't be admonished for that. And there are... Sometimes there's some French expressions and sometimes there are English. So I cannot tell the where those products come from.
Yeah, putting French names can be the culinary world's equivalent of greenwashing. Let me ask you, Laura Carter, Are we overblowing it? It's the easy jet generation. People move about. So is it really that the French and the British don't know each other the way they used to?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think, of course, people have been ever since Brexit and before traveling for city breaks and holidays between France and Britain. But I think the point about university mobility is key. The Erasmus scheme, since that has been taken away, there have been some kind of bilateral exchanges, but it's been tricky. And I just wanted to add, it's also about school visits, right? That's a huge, huge part of getting kids, younger kids, primary and secondary school kids across the channel. And that's been a huge problem since Brexit. I believe in 2023, some progress was made about not requiring passports. But that's where it all starts, when children are much younger and are at school and doing these kinds of short exchanges with their teachers. I think to come back also to the point about the biotapestry, which is, by the way, an embroidery, not a tapestry, I think that's also a really key example of soft power, which is a big part of this kind of Anglo-French things getting closer and having this reset that we've seen since Sunak and then Starmer. It's not the first time that exchange has been promised. It was promised in 2018 and it didn't come through. So we really hope that it happens this time and we see the biotapestry in London, because it really is the symbol of the Anglo-French relationship. It's 900 years old. And if it's there on display in London, then it's kind of undeniable that there is something kind of special between these two countries that isn't just geographical.
Right. And when it comes to soft power, Sandro Gozzi, is there an equivalent of a state dinner at Windsor Castle?
Well, I mean, it's very difficult. Certainly, it helps a lot. And I think that all the setting, all the scenario is there to remain in the spirit of a sort of new entente cordiale between France and UK. And I think also this was the spirit and the golden thread of the speech by Emmanuel Macron. Forms are also substance in politics and diplomacy. And the forms which are followed, the protocol which is being followed during this visit, as we can say that there is a strong will between the two sides, from the kings and from the government on one side, and from the President Macron and the French government on the other side, to really enter into a new phase. And I think that the Windsor Castle and maybe, I'm sure, also the very high quality menu will help a lot to move things toward the right direction.
Let me ask you, Laura Carter, just a technical question here. We know that when the King reads the speech at the opening session of Parliament, it's written by the Prime Minister, right? Is everything chosen by the Prime Minister here, or does the King have some say?
Well, I think that gets to the heart of the question as to kind of like how much say does the King have in these things. He's known to be a Francophile. I'm sure he makes his interests known. The core of it is...
Because the French are painting it as though Charles insisted on France because he's been here 35 times and he loves France. But is that actually the case?
The truth is we don't really know, because he's not going to come out and say that. But he's been very vocal about his love of France and the French language and the French culture. So we've got to believe that he's got a hand in there, if not a light, invisible one.
2023, the now 76-year-old Charles displaying his love of the French language during a state visit to Paris. He had a speech at the French Senate before a joint session of the French Parliament.
En tant que voisin, ami, partenaire et allié, il n'y a pas de défi que nous ne puissions relever.
Christian Lequen, is Charles a relic of the past?
I don't think so. There's a form of modernity also in this man. If you look at this engagement for the planet, for climate change, etc., and also his commitment for Europe, it's absolutely sure that. He was not a big fan of Brexit. I don't think so. Of course, the royal family was not able to express any position officially, and you will not find anything said on Brexit. But we all know that they were against. So I will not call him a relic of the past. That would be unfair.
All right. And we heard that brings us kind of to the heart of the matter. Emmanuel Macron, in that speech, talking about how going forward, yes, he gave nods to the past, but he also said that there needs to be the British, as alongside all the other Europeans, banding together when it comes to things like innovation in a hostile trade world. And he talked at one point in that speech about algorithms.
Being vulnerable to algorithm design in the US. Being vulnerable to algorithm design in China. With social networks, no, not even allowed to the Chinese teenagers. This is being vulnerable to the interferences and misinformation coming from Russia and other places. The strength of our democracies depend on our capacity to create new regulations in order to better protect our children and our democracies and our democratic debate.
And that drew a big applause, Sandro Gozzi, perhaps the biggest of the entire speech. He referenced that Netflix series Adolescence, which shows toxic behavior among teenagers encouraged by what they have on their social media timelines. Let me ask you, is he laying down the gauntlet to the United States and to China? Is this, you know, he talked about strategic autonomy again there.
But I mean, this is certainly one of the issues where the common interest between UK and EU are the strongest. It is clear we are suffering from foreign interference, heavy foreign interference within our democracy and within our societies. And within our societies, mainly through the social network and mainly through the young generation. So they certainly they need to better protect minors. They need to better protect our youth from heavy manipulation and heavy disinformation action. From China, for example, or from Russia, is obvious. But it's obvious also the need to implement our sovereign legislation as European on the digital platform. And this is certainly something which is an open discussion with the US. The US would like us not to implement our digital legislation because they consider it as a form of protectionism, of attack to the American big tech, or even worse, a restriction to freedom of speech. It is none of this. We are simply trying to make our market more efficient and the protection of our citizens and of our minors more effective. And it's exactly the same in UK. After all, there was heavy interference through the platform X by Elon Musk during the British election. There was a clear support by Elon Musk and from other members of the MAGA movement for the extreme right in UK. There is a clear cooperation that they would like to establish, they are establishing between the extreme right in the US and the extreme right of Nigel Farage in UK. So, I mean, these are certainly obvious sector where we should be on the same side. We have proposed as a joint parliamentary assembly to launch a new dialogue on artificial intelligence and on digital issues between EU and UK. I think that it was one of the missing points in the statement of the 9th of May, and we will push because in order to get this at the next EU-UK summit, we think that cooperation on digital issues, cooperation on artificial intelligence bilaterally, but also at UN level and at global level, it is of the utmost importance. And also what we have to do is to reorganize the Security Council in the continent between EU and UK, which passes also through tackling the digital challenges and the cybersecurity issues. I think that, I mean, Everything was, all the things that were organized with the Helsinki Act in 1976 in terms of security have been dismantled by the Russian aggression of Ukraine in 2022. We need to work on a new Helsinki Act in Europe.
I want to get to Ukraine in a moment, but first I want to ask Bénédicte Pavieu, because, again, this is, I think, the part of the speech that got the most applause. And it was, as we heard in that clip, Emmanuel Macron going on the offensive against China, but also against the United States.
Indeed. And he then, I'm looking at my notes, and he really linked it to the defense of democratic values. He talked about an addiction to social media and how it was really important to protect young people who are less than 15 years old from this social media, noting that in China, you know, they can have all these algorithms, but they don't allow their own young to look at it. And then came that word, which is a word really that is, I think, a theme throughout the whole of President Macron's speech to Parliament today, the word sovereignty. Sovereignty, he said, means a lot to us. Ideas and even controversies we want to share. So he's saying it's not lack of freedom of speech, but it's about people expressing themselves really in a responsible way, and certainly not allowing this kind of really bad negative influence. When you think back to, I think, everybody on this panel and in this program, nobody, I think, here used to go home and have a mobile phone in their bedroom where you could effectively have good things, but you could also have, you could be bullied, you could be intimidated, you could be shamed, you could be threatened. And that is the reality of many parents that I speak to about their children, is how, what boundaries to set. He also talked then, again in link with sovereignty, about a certain idea of Europe, stability, security. So again, it's about those shared democratic values. And yes, these are challenges that British youngsters face very much, right, just like French youngsters and indeed EU youngsters.
So that theme got the biggest applause, Laura Carter. And again, it brings me back to King Charles, because this state visit hosted by King Charles, Macron before Trump. And by the way, King Charles, who went to Canada for the opening of the session of Parliament there, something that a British monarch hadn't done in decades.
Yeah, I mean, the quick...
It was a message to the United States?
Perhaps. I was going to say the quick answer is that I think royal protocol traditionally suggests that Commonwealth countries kind of take precedence. So that might be one argument for him putting Canada first. But yeah, I think, you know, as we said, as a monarch, King Charles doesn't get involved in politics directly, but he has his ways of kind of showing where his preferences and his strategic loyalties might want to lie. And it links back also the point you were just making to the point about the fact that King Charles is kind of forward-looking. He's always been interested in youth. He's always been interested in these themes around young people, the environment, as my colleague has said. So I think a lot of the themes of Macron's speech will probably aligned with things that he thinks can be positive about this bilateral relationship.
Christian, again, there is always, when it comes to the environment, this question of whether or not there's greenwashing. This is happening on a day when, here in France, there was legislation to roll back environmental norms that passed the House of Parliament.
Yes, this is a topic now which is linked to the fact that the right-wing parties are stronger in Europe, and in general, the right-wing parties, they consider that green economy has a contradiction with competition, etc., which is totally wrong. But this is something we see also at the level of the European Parliament. I'm sure Sandro Gozzi has this experience with his colleague from the right wing and the far right wing parties, right? Compared to 5 years ago, I would say that the consensus that we seem to see around the idea that we have to go in the direction of a green economy is not there anymore.
And
of course, the fact to have Trump, before Trump, Bolsonaro, etc., populist leaders who are also anti-climate change, etc., it's reinforced the trends, right?
But are Starmer and Macron changing their policies slightly to cater to that electorate? I think most notably the fact that the big focus in the British press has been on a new migration pact. They're supposed to have something to announce on Thursday from between the French and the British leaders.
Well, we will see the effect of the visit on policy change. You know, the visits do not necessarily mean that everything will be changed the day after, right? There is also a lot of symbolic in the visit. But on this question of migration, of course, we see that it's a priority, but it's also a difficult topic because it's difficult to see this problem rationally at the level of domestic politics. It's very emotional, both sides, you know.
Right.
And you have competition. You have Nigel Farage in the UK, and you have Le Pen and Bardella in France. So it's not an easy topic for mainstream politicians.
Let's give a visual example. King Charles not alone in displaying his French-speaking skills. Right-wing tabloid The Daily Mail, its front page this Tuesday, adding a s'il vous plaît to its headlines about the sums paid by Britain over the past decade for the French to keep asylum seekers from crossing the channel. Hand back £771 million, Monsieur Macron, s'il vous plaît, it says.
It's tabloid.
but Bénédicte Pavillot, does the Daily Mail dictate the conversation when it comes to this issue?
No, it doesn't dictate the conversation. It tries to influence it very much. And it was unthinkable that the small boats issue, the migration issue, would not be a very, very big theme, a very big topic. And, of course, President Macron, his ministers accompanying him, and everybody on his team will have been very, very aware. Indeed, he alluded to it in his speech when he talked about gangs and people cannot, quote, fly about the rules and the issue, which he talked about shared burdens as well. So it is clear that he, another theme that he thinks, well, knows that the United Kingdom and France need to work on together. Now, what has been happening here in the media is in the last few days, again, because it's not the first time, there has been a lot of speculation about the possibility of there being a policy and an agreement, and this is just speculation by the British media, about what is called a policy of one in, one out. So that the United Kingdom, if France accepted of these illegal migrants coming across the channel, very dangerously across the channel, mostly men, mostly young, coming across from all parts of the world, Syria, Afghanistan, etc., Syria, of course, and others, that they would then be taken back to France. Then that poses the problem for France of the first country in which those migrants came in. But for the United Kingdom, it would be then to accept one, therefore, migrant in the United Kingdom. Now, that plays really well with some people and really badly with others. But it is clear that the British media and actually many people in the British population will look, and for some it may be one of the only things that they retain if and when we see a policy announced by both Keir Starmer and President Macron as a result of this UK Franco-British summit on Thursday. But I think I remember that President Macron talking about having policies that would be announced, worked on together and announced, and then I think he used the word in English, since his whole speech was in English, implemented. And that's the point. Many things have been said by many prime ministers, indeed Keir Starmer, now prime minister, when he was leader of the opposition, Rishi Sunak. Remember when we had the Downing Street podiums, and one of the pledges that was on those podiums is stop the boats. That is now recognized as being a mistake to have said it in that way. So 20,000 migrants have come across the channel since the beginning of the year. The number is rising, and when in opposition, Keir Starmer day after day, he and his team were saying how they would resolve this. He's found out in power that 1 year into being prime minister that it's you know, it's one thing to say it, it's another to resolve this problem. And clearly anybody who works on this knows that there are very complex issues at hand.
Sandro Gozzi, we saw a bit of a clip of, there was shock, by the way, by some of those images of the French gendarmes going into the water to shred an inflatable dinghy with a knife last week. And, you know, is there a forward-thinking way that doesn't endanger lives? This is a chestnut that's been going on for, 20 years now, more?
Well, let me say that migration, first of all, is the biggest failure of Brexit. Because remember that one of the main reasons presented by Farage, by Boris Johnson, to persuade the British voter to vote in favor of Leave was take back control, and take back control was mainly on migration. Well, today the irregular migration toward UK has increased. Since Brexit, the irregular migration towards the UK has increased, has not decreased. So if there is an obvious failure of Brexit and an obvious consequence, negative consequence for the Brits of the populist propaganda that accompanied the Brexit referendum, this is certainly migration. Then it is clear that migration requires cooperation, and it is also that migration requires action that prevent the loss of lives. There are 78 human beings which have died over the channel. To prevent a boat to leave when it is obvious that the boat is in precarious conditions, and it is obvious that the lives of those people are at risk, is something which is not only possible, but is, I would say, mandatory. And this is what happened in this case, which has been denounced. There is a directive which allows the police and the gendarmes, the French police, to action within 300 meters from the coast. This is what they've done. It is clear that these are last resort action. And it's also clear that there are a part of these issues that can be solved bilaterally between France and UK, but there is another part which must be tackled between UK and EU. Because also the other countries, member of the Schengen zone, the member of the European Union, have a say to this. So, I mean, let's see what will be announced on Thursday. But certainly there is a European dimension that cannot be neglected in tackling this issue. Then we have common interest in tackling and dismantling the networks of traffickers of human beings, better control our borders, improve our cooperation with the country of origin. I mean, these are all common interests between UK and EU, but in London, they might understand the EU can and must play a very central role in all this issue.
Speaking of common interests, there was an entente cordiale sealed in the 19th century first, in times of imperial power, with an eye to Tsarist Russia, and then in 1904 to Germany, with a treaty between the French and the British. Now there are different imperial worries. All aboard, if you will, the night train to Kyiv. Back in May, the leaders of Britain and France went with the new German chancellor, Friedrich Merz. There you see them going off to visit Volodymyr Zelensky on that night train. Laura Carter, by the way, there's going to be this joint summit of the Coalition of the Willing. They're going to be holding it by video conference from a NATO air base. There's going to be next week the British Prime Minister and the German Chancellor signing a common defense pact. Again, when you talk about common interests, is it vis-a-vis Vladimir Putin or vis-a-vis Donald Trump?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's a response to a completely destabilized world as a result of those geopolitical changes, both the ongoing war in Ukraine, but also the fact that Trump is basically completely kind of shredded up all the rules of how the US behaves in relation to Europe with tariffs and not being anywhere near as willing to commit to defense spending. So I think the UK upcoming defense partnership with Germany, but also leaning into the relationship with France when it comes to defense and security, it's really the only option.
In his speech, Emmanuel Macron talked about defending the 1945 order, the post-World War II order. Is that gone, the 1945 order?
Well, I mean, there's echoes of Churchill's Gathering Storm, right, in the way that these threats are being kind of drummed up. I mean, I think the alliance after the Second World War was a European alliance, and it was the core of it had during the Second World War been a Franco-British alliance with the US in there too. So it's not really the same thing. I think this is really just a response to all the things that have changed since Trump took his second presidency in January, but also the ongoing situation in Ukraine, not to mention the developing situation in the Middle East.
Christian Lequien?
My impression is that one of the achievements of both Trump and Putin is that they have made the relations between the European leaders better, right? If you consider the current situation and you see the relationships between Starmer, between Macron, Merz, but also Tusk in Poland. Well, they are very good. They are very good when it was not the case a couple of years ago. So, I think to this extent there is a change of the order because of the world order, because the Europeans are now able to sync their security, to sync also their diplomacy, not necessarily with the United States, right? This is something they are forced to because of Trump. But of course, the discourse cannot be the same in Berlin, London, and Paris. In Paris, you could say, well, you know, we need some autonomic strategy, etc., because we are General de Gaulle in our history, so it's something which is legitimate. If you're a German chancellor, if you are a British prime minister, it's more difficult to have this kind of narrative. But the trend towards autonomy, towards strategic autonomy, is the same in every country.
A trend? We're not there yet, though, Sandro Gozzi.
No, we are not there yet, but certainly it is true. I would say that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin could be remembered as the new founding fathers of the European Union, especially on defense and security. So Donald Trump is seeking for the Nobel Prize, but we could thinking of giving him the Charlemagne Prize already. If what is possible to what could happen, it will really happen. I think on defense and security can be the new priority for a new chapter of European integration. There is a strong will in Paris. I beg your pardon?
Is it the most important issue? Is this the heart of the matter of this state visit?
At the moment, yes. At the moment, yes. At the moment, security and defense is the most important issue. Not the only one, but the most important issue. It's also the most important issue in the relation between London and Brussels. And it's also the most important issue because, as I was saying before, we have to think to the future, and in the future we have to work on a new Helsinki Act. The Helsinki Act of 1976 organized the security and cooperation in Europe. Now everything has fallen apart. It's fallen apart because a member of the Security Council, Russia, has violated one of the fundamental principles, not only of the UN, but also Helsinki Act, the integrity of the borders, because the US clearly wants to disengage from the European continent. So we have really to think how to reorganize the security and the cooperation in Europe, how to organize a new coexistence in Europe. And from this perspective, it is clear that the relation between the two only European countries, which are member of Security Council and which have the nuclear weapon, is absolutely fundamental. And I think that this can be a new chapter of European integration between the willing country, the willing member state that wants to go faster and deeper toward the direction, and in the same time, those group of countries can and must build up new security and strategic partnership with UK, with Canada, with Norway. So I think that this is really this, a form of Europe based on the, on the political will. Those who wants to go faster and deepen their integration, especially in defense, they must be allowed to do so without obliging the others, be they Austrian, Hungarian, Maltese or Irish, to follow them.
And the fact that Britain is not in the EU might make that easier. We're out of time. An army moves on its stomach. Bénédicte Pavio, give us some news.
Right, okay. In the spirit of the Entente Cordiale, the royal household has collaborated with famous French chef Raymond Blanc. And I can tell you that the first course was a selection, will be, a selection of tender summer vegetables from the gardens of one of the restaurants of Le Manoir of Chef Blanc, with sage, raw tomato and extra virgin olive oil dressing. Then supreme of Rugg Estate chicken with Norfolk asparagus and tarragon cream. Then iced blackcurrant parfait on a blackcurrant soaked sponge with elderflower jelly. Then they will have Grand Champagne and vintage port, reflecting President Macron's date of birth and His Majesty King Charles III's king of birth. And here's it, a cocktail that is for the occasion called L'Entente, combining British gin, lemon curd, French pastis, garnished with some flowers.
To be French consumed flowers. With moderation, and no doubt. Bénédicte Pavieux coming through as always. Many thanks for that. I want to thank Sandro Gozzi for being with us from Brussels, Laura Carter, thank Christian you. Lequen. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.